the next episode of the Mental Health and Wellbeing in COVID-19 webinar series, which has been brought to you by Migro. More about them in a second. My name is Theron Knightenfitt. I have been your host all the way through, stuck with you each weekday from the initial lockdown, even into the extension. So it's been great and it's been exciting, and we're back again today. So today's episode 23, title for today is Growth and Self-Actualization with artist Alice Teutsch. Very exciting guest that we're going to be connecting with a little bit later. I'll tell you a bit more about it when we get closer to that. Anyway, just a quick reminder about what the series is about. Maybe you're joining us for the first time. This is a series aimed at providing you with tools and resources to help you with some of the emotional and psychological dynamics that are coming along with the season that we find ourselves in. The world has been turned upside down, and that comes with some collateral impact on us, in our psyche, in our emotions. And there are ways that we can deal with this effectively. And this webinar series has been aimed at bringing you some of those ways. So we're back again and we are continuing to explore some ways, and you will have more resources and more tools and more tricks after today's episode. Okay, as I mentioned, I don't think I did actually. The series is brought to you by Migro, the emotional intelligence platform. Migro is an online tool that helps you develop your EQ. And we have made a free subscription available to everyone who signed up or who is viewing these webinars. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that at the end. But that's what Migro is, and it's brought to you by Migro. Okay, quick recap on the previous episode. So we interviewed the Ironman athlete, Alvain Ace, it was a great episode. A previous episode, make sure you go and have a look at that, because it was super inspiring. I was really inspired by my chat with him. He was a successful young rugby player who had a car accident and became paralyzed, and then went on to become an Ironman competitor. So, super inspirational. What did we look at there? We looked at the three good things, EQ skill, or three good things, EQ technique, and the signature strengths technique. Both techniques aimed at helping you develop positive resources and a positive outlook and view of both yourself and also of the world, which is super important for us to be able to move forward in a way that flourishes into, you know, not just in the present moment, but into the future that we are all trying to recreate and dream and imagine something better than what we had in the past. Key takeaway from my chat with him was that we can come out of this better. We can adapt. Humans are amazing. A while back we did an episode on flexibility. Go check that out, the emotional skill of flexibility. We can adapt and we can get better. We chatted a lot about the power of being able to imagine a new world or a new future for ourselves in our mind, and then to chase that down and make it happen. And we heard his story of how he's done that and not allowed his setbacks to define him. Okay, so today's episode 24, talking about self-actualization, we're talking about a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, and then we're going to dive in and have this chat with Alex. Okay, so let's chat a little bit about self-actualization. Before we get there, remember we chatted about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I think we've touched on it a couple of times in previous episodes. Maslow's hierarchy is essentially a construct that helps us understand the hierarchy of the needs we will experience. I'm not going to go into too much detail. Go and check out the previous episodes on that. We'll put the links to what those are in the comments, and you can go and find those previous episodes. But essentially, right at the top of this pyramid, once we've had our physiological needs met, our safety needs, once we've started with our psychological needs getting met, belongingness, esteem, we get into that top triangle, self-fulfillment. And at the top there, we have this word self-actualization, which means achieving one's full potential. You know, when you are running away from the lion, or when you are trying to find food, you're not thinking about perfecting yourself, you're thinking about survival. But once you take care of those needs, once you're warm and well-fed, once you are in relationship, once you're in community, you start developing a perspective that leads you to, how do I grow myself to my full potential? Now, there is an EQ skill called self-actualization. On the wheel that we use, on the construct that we use at Migro, the EQI 2.0 from Multi Health Systems, we have these five pizza slices. We've gone through them before. Now, self-perception is that top one. And one of the three sub-competencies or sub-skills of self-perception, the way you see yourself, is the skill of self-actualization. Now, the definition of self-actualization, according to the EQI 2.0, is to strive to achieve personal goals and actualize one's potential. Now, it's very important to understand that it is a sub-skill of that major pizza slice, self-perception. It really is about your own perception and perspective on who you are as a person. Now, we've dealt with this a lot, especially in the first 3 weeks of the series, talking about some of our subconscious identities, how those are formed, and the stories we believe about ourselves. We also chatted quite a bit about how we can rewrite those stories and the power of the imagination to not just rewrite our stories, but to rewrite the world, to reimagine the world. So go back and check out those episodes. Okay, so that's what self-actualization is. Now, we're only going to get to that point of growth if we have something called a growth mindset. Now, perhaps you've come across this idea of a growth mindset before. It's from the work of Dr. Carol Dweck. She's a psychology professor at Stanford. And it's super simple. This idea of a growth mindset is super simple. And it's in contrast to a fixed mindset. We can't spend too long on this, but it's very helpful to sort of set a foundation for the conversation we're going to be moving into in a minute. So, let's talk about a fixed mindset. A fixed mindset assumes that everything we have is fixed. All the resources, my intelligence, my creativity, whatever skills I have, that's just fixed. I can't really do much about that. I'm this intelligent, I am this creative, I am this friendly. There's nothing I can do to grow that. That's what a fixed mindset says. So if we need to feel good about ourselves and the potential we can achieve, take the self-actualization idea, then success means affirming that what we have, the resources we have, our intelligence, our creativity, our skills, whatever, affirming that is what gives us value. So measuring ourselves against others and some external standard becomes the game we play in this idea of self-perception, how we see ourselves. We've chatted a little bit in the past about this high jump bar of life that we give ourselves. You know, we create these ridiculous expectations for ourselves to measure up with, and we do that by looking at others. We chatted about this roller coaster ride, chatted in the past about, you know, a study done with two separate groups of students who placed their sense of self-worth in their academic abilities. And you just saw this roller coaster ride as they got accepted or rejected from different tertiary education institutions to study. When they got accepted, they felt good about themselves. When another one sent a rejection letter, they felt bad about themselves. So if you have a fixed mindset, you don't really believe there's too much you can do about who you are. And when you fail, it really hits you hard because it proves that what you have isn't really enough. But there's another option, and this is what Dweck presents as a much more healthy way of living, and it is a growth mindset. So now, if you have a growth mindset, you thrive on challenges. You thrive on setbacks. You see, setbacks don't prove you're worthless. Setbacks become a foundation for you to grow. Challenges become a moment on which you can, instead of saying, oh, I'm unintelligent, or oh, I'm not creative, or someone else is better, instead of that being the story we tell ourselves and believe, it becomes a foundation, a springboard for us to grow, for us to learn, for us to adapt. In her words, this is what she says. She says, for 20 years, my research has shown that the view you adopt for yourselves, self-perception, to go back to our EQ terminology, profoundly affects the way you lead your life. It can determine whether you become the person you want to be and whether you accomplish the things you value. Sorry, got my tone wrong there. And accomplish the things you value. How does this happen? How can a simple belief have the power to transform your psychology and, as a result, your life? Remember again, we chatted about the stories we believe about ourselves. The way we see ourselves in the story as victim or as creator, there's different ways of seeing ourselves. She carries on. Believing that your qualities are carved in stone, the fixed mindset, creates an urgency to prove yourself over and over. And if you have only a certain amount of intelligence or a certain personality, a certain moral character, well, then you'd better prove that you have a healthy dose of those things. So here's my question for this episode. What does a fixed mindset look like for you in this moment? With the challenges you're facing at home, homeschooling if you're a parent, social deprivation if you're staying by yourself, whatever the challenges are, in those challenges, in this moment, perhaps you are trying to think through how your company is going to survive into the future, or whether your job is secure. In this moment, what does a fixed mindset look like for you? And there's a second question. What could a growth mindset look like? What does it take for you to come out of this believing that you can be more than you are or more than you were? You see, the challenges that you have at home, if you have a fixed mindset, become the lot that you have. It's just the hand that you were dealt. There's nothing you can do about it. A growth mindset says, no, we can pivot. We can change. We can grow. Remember Alvain and everything he shared with us. We can invent the future in our minds and then chase it down. We can be committed to that. We can reimagine the world. We can be flexible. But how do we do that? How do we get there? Well, we've heard the advice from so many different experts. We can eat well. We can exercise. We can sleep. And we can play. We can play. This is something that excites me very much. And we don't have time right now to go into the benefits of play. But I want to pivot into this conversation that we're going to have now with Alice, because art is an incredibly powerful space and medium for us to grow, for us to heal, maybe even. And it is, if we are in a time right now where we need innovation and we need to be able to reimagine what our future looks like, what our company can do to pivot, to change our product, what can we do to make the world that is coming at us a better experience for us than it has been? Well, art and everything that art can teach us becomes a place to really start getting to grips with how we can grow and develop. Okay, so let's get Alice on in a second. First, let me just introduce her. On Twitter, she has her bio very short and simple. She is an artist and tartist. Says she, that means she's not just an artist, she's also a baker. In fact, she was in the 2015 season, the first season of the BBC's South African version of the Great Bake Off. So the Great South African Bake Off. She was one of the contestants there. She trained at Michaelis School of Fine Art here in Cape Town. And then she continued her studies in Italy at the Florence Academy of Art in Italy. So, you know, if you want to know about art, that's where you go. That's what she did. But recently during lockdown, and this is why we have her in the show today, she did something super cool. She did a lockdown challenge. Let me not tell you too much about it, but she called it 21 Days of Art. And we're going to ask her about this because it's become a fascinating moment for a lot of people to experience something positive in this time. So let's get Alice on. Alice, can you hear me? Are you online here?
Hey, Theron. Can you hear me?
Hey, we got you. There you are. So welcome to the show today. Thanks for being part of it.
Thank you for having me. That was such an inspiring introduction and just loving everything that you said in that. Couldn't agree more about having very much in the last 3 years being in Italy, felt the oscillations in myself between the fixed and the growth mindset and how they had a direct impact on my personal growth and the growth of the community I was a part of.
Wow, that's amazing. I must say, I found the growth mindset idea. You know, sometimes in psychology, there's things that are a bit confusing and it takes a while to understand them. And then sometimes there's these really concise little nuggets that are just so easy to latch onto. And for me, this growth mindset versus fixed mindset is just so intuitive. I really resonate with it. So yeah, I hear you. I hear everything you're saying. Okay, let's dive in. Tell me about this challenge you did on with your Instagram following. I think maybe it was wider than that as well. But tell me about this 21 Days of Art. What was the thinking? What was the reasoning? What was the motivation? And what was the impact of it?
So, Theron, it came about quite spontaneously, in fact. It was held on Instagram, but it was quite immediate when Cyril Ramaphosa announced that we'd be going into a 21-day lockdown. I, being an artist and a full-time artist myself, was totally comfortable with this idea of spending the next 21 days at home. I'm very familiar with the idea of setting myself tasks. I spend hours alone working at the work that I create relies on time I spend alone. And I felt quite comfortable. And then there was this immediate sense I got that there were a lot of people in my immediate community who were very uncomfortable with this idea. It might have had a link to the fact that I've started private teaching this year. So my students that I deal with, I teach them either specific drawing or painting geared to where they want to go with their art. Most of them, actually all of them, are not full-time artists. So they've taken on the practice of creating art very much for the reason that you've just laid out, for getting themselves into a growth mindset, for developing themselves, for furthering on multiple levels that are impacted for the same way we would exercise to create a better start to our day or meditate in order to create less mistakes in the work we do. There's been, I feel it greatly in my work, how learning and treating art making as a practice is so much greater than simply the act of making art. It's got repercussions that grow outwards from this practice. And the idea just came about that there would be a lot of people I knew that would be very uncomfortable to be at home for many hours, that might benefit from some guidance of many of my friends. Much of my community is in the creative space. So that I might be able to tap into my network and bring forward in this space that globally is quite difficult for many people, that just might bring ease and even benefit and growth in this time. I also thought it was a wonderful opportunity because my students who I see for 3-hour sessions, they come in and sometimes 3 hours every 2 weeks is all the time that they have to dedicate their time to creating art. And my number one I'm always pushing is, whenever you have time, have your sketchbook nearby or do these exercises. Really, the practice of making and to multiply the time we spend doing something has a direct impact on how much better we become at it. And this is, of course, you'll know much more about this psychologically with the neural pathways of rerouting and having to install those pathways and the impact and benefit of rote work. That's done with the correct, mindset and alignment. So I just thought, what a brilliant opportunity. There's so many people out there that are not going to be spending an hour to 2 to 3 hours commuting, an hour getting ready for work. They might be able to work remotely from home, but there's going to be a couple hours of play every day that can be available to everyone out there. And, it can be spent sitting down, reading reams of news that might get you into an incredibly anxious space, and that's not going to help anyone, definitely not going to help yourself. Or it could be spent taking on a new task, something that will encourage growth, encourage play, and connect us all. I think one massive takeaway, there were many, but one of the massive takeaways from the 3 years I trained in Florence was the importance of community. When we are experiencing a vulnerability in a new space, for example, learning a new task or working in a new kind of way, especially because we're socially engineered beings, we really rely on these dynamics that, again, you'd probably know a lot more all the reasons for this, but that when we do try something new, that we get a reward basis socially from this, and that emotionally reinforces us to continue on in a positive way. So I came up with the idea. So 21 days, fantastic. I'm going to set our 21 tasks. They're going to all be based around the house or home or apartment. They'll be accessible. The whole prompt from the get-go was, don't go out and buy anything new. I've always said this. The tools are simple. The difficult part is getting yourself to do it every day. It's very much the same. Anyone who's tried a yoga practice or meditation practice, you don't really need anything. Maybe a mat, maybe a mirror. But you need to be present. You need to be showing up. So I said, many people I know have always tell me, I'm so uncreative and I can't draw a stick man. And I have such issues with that. We don't naturally even draw stick men. That's something that's taught to us as children. If you give a child a pencil and you ask them to draw a human, they draw this beautiful, strange, amoebic shape. They actually draw the outline of space and form, which is something in drawing and painting we come back to. The outline is incredibly important. Unlike sculpture, where you have a 3-dimension, in drawing and painting, your 2-dimensional quality line is incredibly important to express form and space. So I said, crack open those box of crayons. Maybe they're your kids' crayons. Maybe you've just got an HB pencil. You can use the back of, pieces of paper that you would have thrown away. And if you are an artist and you want some more geared space to dedicate to bettering your practice, here's 21 challenges. They are open to everyone. You can sketch them, paint them, respond. I had people respond in baking, people respond in poetry. It was incredible. I actually get goosebumps thinking about it now, because there really is not much that I actually did other than facilitate a daily prompt, some online engagement with everyone who was partaking. And then by the end of every day, I made sure to pop online and exhibit the works of the day. And that created an amazing place for people to come back to. Again, why I say this, the sense of community is very important when you are trying something new and you're feeling very much alone and vulnerable.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me about the feedback you got from these, from the people who did this. Like, how did they, you know, not just about how, what the art looked like, but what was that process like for them? What did they, what did they tell you?
Oh, it was immense. And in the first few days, actually, there was a great gear towards getting a lot of people wanting to get a lot of their friends and family involved before the first day challenge was sent out. So there was an incredible response from absolutely across the board, an array of people. There were people in isolation alone that often referred to the challenge for them as a lifeline. There were people that were in dynamics of friends and family, or people isolating as whole families that would create a space every day to engage with their children in an authentic way. So they would complete the tasks either with their children, or I had some incredible messages coming through whereby people were just expressing their gratitude for having this, for having the space to come to and the structure in which to fulfill some promises they had made to themselves, whether they were, you know, New Year's resolutions at the beginning of the year. I aim to become more creative this year. I aim to play more this year. I aim to allow myself to be bad at something for a while until I'm good at it again. All of these things. So there were people, as I say, everyone from, there was a 92-year-old. It actually wasn't just, even though the art prompt in the hashtag, which connected it all, was 21 Days of Art SA, there, it was quite global. I had people sending in work from Canada, Australia, Berlin, everyone, wow. You know, of, from across the board, young children to old 92-year-olds. Incredible drawer who would send in daily challenges. We actually got his granddaughter to send in challenges for him. He does not, doesn't use Instagram. And then I had messages from people that had actually started separate groups, WhatsApps, to encourage each other and to share their work there. And
What's really cool is to see that this innovative idea, I mean, you've done something in your field, in your space, similar to what we've done. I mean, we did a 21 Days of Lockdown webinar series, which is now carried on, but there have been a number of iterations of the same kind of idea. Let's do something every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, we interviewed Scott Posadino a while back, and he was doing every day, and he's still doing it every day, an Insta, you know, video.
I'm loving it. So it's totally brilliant.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun and it's light, and it was really great with him chatting about, even again, there's a point of connection here, the catharsis of humor, making fun of the moment, or not making light of it were his words, but seeing, you know, using humor to process it a little bit. Mm. And of course, there's a connection here with what you're, what you've done with this, using art as a, and creating a structure. Now, what's really cool is that you've done something innovative, and it has sparked further innovation. You know what I mean? It's almost like your act of creating this challenge, as you say, has other little groups have spun off out of it. It has taken a life of its own and grown, which for me is super exciting, because I think that's the space we're getting to globally as a humanity. Mm-hmm. We are moving into a growth mindset. First, I think I mentioned this a few episodes back, but I had this almost this conscious moment of shifting from a fixed mindset into a growth mindset for this current moment, realizing we're doing a reset on who we are as a planet. And it's totally. That's actually quite exciting. Now, one of the things that I, in prepping for this chat with you, I was reading about play and what happens with children when they play. And there's a great connection there with this EQ skill of flexibility, which I briefly mentioned earlier. Because what play does, you reminded me of it now when you were chatting about neural pathways, etc. What play does is it reinforces the neural pathways we need to adapt to things. So this is why I'm seeing this great connection between art as a place to grow ourselves and what it does to equip us with certain neural architecture and emotional competencies to be able to be flexible in an adapting environment, which of course we've been saying it, everybody's saying it, the moment is adapting. And from my own experience as an artist, I'm a filmmaker myself. I remember a film I made a few years back was such a cathartic moment for me to process something in my own life. In fact, I remember when I was writing the script for it, I would I'd be writing and just crying, you know, being super dramatic here, but it was something I needed to process in my own personal life. And just the process of making art became this really cathartic process of dealing with it. And it became a moment for me to grow. That situation, that scenario wasn't just what I had been handed. It was something I could process. And there is a long history. In fact, the idea of catharsis comes from drama, really. It's from Aristotle back in, you know, pre-BC times, talking about how when we see tragedy, it gives us a chance to purge, which is the Greek words, purge some of those emotions around fear, etc. So I'd love you to speak a little bit from your perspective as an artist and your philosophy around the growth and catharsis that comes from not just a finished artwork, but the process of making or of playing. That helps us deal with, you know, perhaps even the trauma of a moment like this and process it in a way that can help us imagine a life of flourishing going forward. Over to you.
Okay, well, wow, so many brilliant prompts in what you've just shared. And it is exactly as you say, it is the process of doing, it's the availability to have this adaptive mindset that makes play and that makes the practice of, for me, art making so vital to my being. I think that a thing we tend to lose touch of as we grow older is that, you know, and it comes down to this hustle mentality, and we're normally so stretched emotionally and, you know, mentally for the various amounts of activities we have to do every day, that unless something is bearing us a direct result that we can value monetarily or, you know, socially, whatever, we're less likely to give ourselves over to it, time-wise, energy-wise, emotionally. Yeah. Yet, without it, there's just a plethora of problems that can come later if we don't, for example, directly deal and process with emotion, with psychological pain, with trauma. And you've tapped onto one of the most important things about having a practice of art making. And I couldn't be more excited by this idea, because it's a really, I find it to be very untapped. Culturally, art has always had, and historically, a binding effect between people. And that comes from its ability to connect, not only through the positives, like the beauty and the awe and moments of experiencing rapture upon seeing beautiful artworks, but very much through pain, through cathartic cultural healing, through ritualized action. So today, it's very hard to find a way in which art, and I'm talking about contemporary society, has not been commodified, and basically the commodity of art today is seen as something. So people have this idea, can I be an artist because number one, maybe I'm making art I'm not selling. Number two, maybe I'm making art that I don't deem is good enough to even share with other people. Maybe I'm, you know, there's this overriding myth, which is unless I'm making art, which is being sold by a gallery in a, you know, white cube gallery space, I don't have the right. I don't have the access as an adult to make that art, which is something we just don't believe as children. I mean, you give a child a task and there's just like confidence boost 100, you know, it's like, here's a violin, and they grab me like, I'm the best violin player. I'm amazing. You know, and it's, where do we lose that along the way? And that's kind of, I think, something that, you know, not just boundless confidence in all spheres, but there needs to be a confidence in oneself to be able to allow one to go into the space where one is not judging everything you do subconsciously. Things that can come out when you're making art need to be processed and created, as you experienced with your writing of your scripts and possibly many times during filmmaking, that things happen. Now, I feel at a loss for words when I try and talk about this thing. It's quite a sacred space. I think artists historically have always really found it difficult to talk about what happens in these spaces. And there's, you know, the myths that talk about muses coming down to people when they're in a state of work. Today we have the psychological modern terms of flow, working within flow. There's something that happens that's almost, you know, a supra literary. It's not, it's a space that we all, I believe, have access to, deserve to live life in, because it's incredibly healing. It's incredibly important that we, and I'm sure from psychology, you know, it's one of the founding principles, I guess, that there's projection happening all the time. So something that you mentioned earlier, which is, you know, if we process our trauma through watching a great tragedy, through watching a sad film, through looking at a piece of art that talks about, you know, something very simple and very well known, the Madonna and Child, the grieving of a mother that has lost, that deep sense of love and loss is something that, you know, maybe even as children we're available to it. Maybe we, you know, our goldfish died last week, whatever. But as adults, we go into this mindset where we think, okay, cool, now I'm an adult, now I can process all things if I can rationalize them. So, okay, something died, my cat died, and I'm going to give myself a week to mourn, and then I need to be over it because I've got things to do, I've got bills to pay, I've got people to... And it's so funny because that's just not the way it works. And we know that because things pop up at awkward times and awkward moments and can trigger things. And unless we have a process of play, we're not able to wrestle with our demons. We're not able to play with them where we wrestle into a dance. And so, you know, some things we have control over, some things we aim to have more control over. But I think when we go into a space of making art and what art is, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, but I'm lucky to have quite a traditional link with, I do oil paintings, mostly is my favorite medium, drawing, and quite traditional genres of portraiture, landscape, still life. And another thing which I hadn't mentioned earlier is I work, the reason for me going over to train in Italy was to convert my practice to being a from life practice. And what that means is I don't use photographs. I only paint people that are in my presence. I only paint landscapes I'm in front of. I only create still lives from the objects around me. So I have a very real, visceral connection to what I'm aiming to represent. And what that has taught me, because we live so much of our lives virtually online, is really to be present with what is prompting me, what I might be going through every day. For a greater reason, I do rely on it to make better work. I actually find it very difficult now to work from anything two dimensional.
I love that. We're running out of time here, so let me take this moment to segue out and to just, because what you've reminded us of is this concept or this practice of mindfulness, which we've talked about a number of times in the show, being present with what is. I love it that that's the root of how you do your work. I've never heard of this term from life or however you mentioned it. I'm not familiar with it.
Check out the hashtag, brilliant artworks. Brilliant.
Okay. But that practice is the ability, it mirrors the ability to be able to be mindful and present in this moment and say, how am I going to respond to this moment? So we need to start wrapping things up this side. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Alice.
It was a lot of fun, Theron. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Pleasure. So I told you before you could get your free subscription of Migro. Go to migro.me. You can sign up there and get your 21-day COVID trial. Even though we've gone longer than 21 days of lockdown, that is still available. Please go check that out. There are resources there, the COVID-19 tab, all the different things that we've chatted about over the whole series so far are there. And please help us to help others. You can spread the word on our media, social media channels, Facebook, Instagram. Please go like us on Instagram and follow us, do all those great things. And then of course, sign up at the wellbeingcovid19.com if you haven't, and send your friends and family to sign up for this webinar series over there. We may be in this alone, we may be with others, but we are all in this together. And as Susan David says, we are all in this differently. But I want to encourage you to reach out to each other and realize that, as Alice has shared with us, community is so important. That collaborative impact in all of life is so important. One of the things she learned while she was in Italy. Thank you so much for being with us today. We will see you in the next episode.